All right, so first of all, it's always a pleasure to be at NACL. I've been coming, I don't know, this is got to be 10 years. I don't 15? How old is NACL?
I've got
to check.
What?
2002.
I think I've been here since 2002. So that's already 16 years.
Take this one.
Wow. Yeah, thank God.
There's when I started.
Thank God. That's it. So we're going to tackle a relevant issue or a current event issue. Topic is sexuality in the age of Tinder. I'm gonna assume you all know nothing about this. So this is we'll get the basics and then we'll go from there. Okay. When online dating came out, like J-Date, when you wanted to meet somebody beyond your immediate circle, before online dating, you had to meet somebody through friends and family. And you were set up, and that was the way it was done. I was set up through a common friend back in the early 90s. And very few people at that time even actually had a personal computer. And the internet was extremely primitive, you know, essentially was only used by the government. That all changed. So, and then specific to the issue of dating, we had a couple of eras. You had J-Date and all these different sites where you went on, you put your picture, you put your profile, and then and if you showed interest, you reached out, and if it was mutual, then you would set up a time, you go on a date. Fine. Then the last about six years ago, when many of the online sites added an additional or an app purely on your phone. Tinder, about 6 years ago, created something which is, they don't have a website. It's all apps. And what is on the app? The app is that basically you have six pictures of yourself. Very little biographical information is actually necessary. And basically, you sign up, and different, depending on how much you pay for the thing, and you see somebody. If you swipe right, that means you like them. And they swipe right. It's a shidduch. Ta-da! And so, now, they're not the only one. There's a Jewish Tinder, which is called J-Swipe. There's also Bumble and Grindr and Fish in the Sea, and the list goes on. A lot of different apps in this particular...
You know a lot about Grindr.
All right. So, now, just to give you a sense, the latest stats, just to show you how pervasive this is, okay? The question is, there's a difference between people going on to J-Date and to Tinder. What is Tinder essentially an instrument for? Let's just be very clear about this.
Tinder.
Yes. It's called.
Laughing. You don't even know what it is.
All right.
It's relations, right?
Yeah, correct. He's right. He got
the memory. It's all right.
Okay. All right. All right. So basically the goal of Tinder and Bumble and Grindr and all these different apps are not instrumental for long-term relationships.
Tinder, what else are called?
I'm taping this so you can review all the information.
Good.
So all these apps are utilized for short-term relationships, what they call a hookup. And now just to show you the pervasive, let me read you the stats. It has 50 million users. 50 million. Now, just you should remember, how many people live in the United States? 340. So 50 million users. Worldwide, okay. 10 million active users. Okay, I'm not sure how they define active, but whatever. 10 billion matches. So that means both people have swiped right, so that's 10 billion things. 26 million matches per day. Now, 54% Tinder users are single. And 7% of users are millennial. Now, the fact that nearly 80% are in their 20s and 30s is no surprise because basically that age of everybody, everything is their phone. So that's just a natural extension of their... What do you find is the most surprising stat here?
Singles. Only 50... Yeah, I was going to say that.
Exactly. Now, that was a little shocker. That comment was a what? Now, I would imagine that would have been, in the 90% are singles. As they say, the math don't lie. So that means that many people are using their Tinder as a, shall we say, as an enhancement or as an extension.
Do they have a site for that?
Separate one, yeah. But those are dedicated. Exactly. So that's the...
That's what it was.
And then, of course, the database got hacked revealed, and then you find all the people are having affairs, or at least trying to have affairs. Yeah. Okay, correct. So Now, let's go a next step further. So, what is the hookup culture? Now, it goes on, there's a hookup, and there's a hookup culture. It goes one step beyond that. What does it mean something to be a culture?
I don't know this way of life sometimes.
Okay, good.
just look at me. I don't understand these things.
Okay, but...
No one's life has been right for you, is that it?
Nobody's hooking me up.
So what is that? What does it mean by it? What does it mean by it's a culture? Certainly in colleges, where they've done a lot of research on this, and as well as young professionals in the major cities of L.A., Miami, New York, Washington, there's a phenomenon called a hookup culture. Who can identify with the hookup culture? And I'm going to show a short video in a moment. We'll show a video.
There's always videos.
Maybe when you show the video, we can.
We'll get to that. Okay. All right, what does it mean by something to be a culture? What is a culture versus
a way of life?
Right. So therefore, in other words, a culture means there could be a hookup as being a standalone, separate activity that individuals do, and then there's actually becomes part of the outlook and the way of the way of life of an entire segment of an entire demographic in our society. Okay. So that's what we have here. It's very prevalent among people in their college years and post-college years in their 20s, let's say, even going into the 30s.
There's a joke. Why buy the cow if you can get the milk free?
Correct.
Apps are making it that much easier to get
right.
the milk
so,
free.
So first of all, by the way, so let me just give you just one little sense on the technology. What the power of the app is, it sends you a picture. Does anybody know what the criteria, what is the most, what is the efficiency, what is the technological efficiency or delivery system that this provides? Is people also very close by?
Yeah.
Or you're not getting a picture of a girl from Chicago and L.A.
It's all within
a certain radius, yeah. Which a parameter which you might. So it's essentially like
control.
So it's essentially like, in Manhattan, nearly of the 29,000 restaurants, you have, five or six apps where you can, which will create, delivery. So you don't have to get up. Certainly in Manhattan, you can have access to basically 20,000 plus restaurants using the
20,000 restaurants.
Yeah, the 29,000 restaurants in Manhattan.
Holy
yeah.
Hell.
So, is there any specific kind of food that you want can be delivered to your desk? In other words, you don't even have to get up. The delivery guy will come to your desk, and you've paid for it via the app. So basically, this is like food delivery for sex. That's what essentially it is. It's using the power of all this technology, which is extremely complicated on the back end to deliver where the person is, your GPS location, all your criteria, bum 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 bum, the stuff that you're getting, you're swiping right to something that's delivered to you. So basically, it's literally sex to your door. Okay. Now, so let's go into just a short 1 minute video.
Where do I sign up?
I'm ready.
Sold.
This is like, I'm really liking what's going on.
BLY, it's called Tinder or Craigslist or Grindr. In short, social media and applications are helping people hook up in ways like never before. Let's take a look at a study out of Rhode Island. This study shows that the 1980s compared to now, syphilis up 79%, gonorrhea up 30%, and new cases of HIV up 33%. So the experts ask themselves, why are we seeing these big increases? We didn't see these kinds of increases from the 80s to the 90s, and they think one big reason is now we have these apps and these social media websites. It's as easy as swiping right to make that love connection and hook up with someone or someones very quickly. Blame the sites. They're not making people have promiscuous sex. There's personal responsibility here. People need to ask each other, hey, have you been tested? If you haven't, I want you to be tested. And of course, condoms should be used.
Okay, there we go.
This is CNN. That's fake news.
Fake news. Okay, so that's
twice the time.
Okay. Yeah, of course it makes sense.
All righty.
Most of these hookups are done when half of them are drunk. So, yeah, just like it was in the old days at a bar. You'd go to a club, you'd get a bunch of numbers.
When you're talking about 26 million matches per day, I'm not going to say everybody's drunk. That's a little bit, and not to mention that There's a whole, by the way, just I don't want to go into a whole study because we have limited time here, but there's literally a cottage industry around the entire Tinder culture. In other words, there are photographers that specialize in getting, who have worked out what is the best
angle.
In other words, they will create the best Tinder profiles for you. In other words, and you'll pay them X dollars, and they specialize in, they'll get your six best pictures to present to the public, who will maximize your getting, you know, being swiped right towards it.
There was a joke, this guy, I don't know if it was a joke or not, this guy on Tinder had a picture of his bank account statement.
Okay, whatever. Okay, that's but that's true. That's actually okay. All right. Now, again, not all of them. By the way, we don't want to be involved in I know JSwipe, which is a Jewish app, is officially designed not for short-term relationships, and I know a number of people who actually got married via that thing. So there's not, the technology does not have to be only used for hookups, right. But we're talking about that right now. So I'm going to ask the most obvious question, then we're going to drill down as we always like to do. What do you think is the motivation for men? Gentlemen?
I have no idea.
Oh, a loving, long-term, caring relationship.
Yeah, okay. So yes,
I think it's as equal for women.
We're gonna get to women's next.
Every woman that's on.
Okay, obviously it takes there's two parties in this situation. We're gonna get to the women in a moment. Now, the appeal? Of course, it's number one is that any woman that you find attractive. There's an excitement. But what is really the great allure of this sex?
Easy.
It's easy, but it's not just that. What
no
else?
Commitment.
There you go. And no commitment, and also no commitment. Therefore, what?
Goodbye. Wham bam. Thank you, ma'am.
See ya.
Right. No. No worries. Easy. No commitment, and the most biggest thing: no responsibility.
Go home. See you later. Well,
and oftentimes in a minute. You're right. So therefore, it has all the. It basically. The person can get the sexual gratification without any of the responsibility or any of the consequences that are normally...
obviously not, because gonorrhea's gone up, those STDs have gone up.
No, I understand that. So, but a guy who has a little bit of game and is having just using the basics of sexual protection can avoid nearly all of that, okay? But you're right, but since it's such a... It's like literally, it's equivalent of like, I'm sure everybody's been to a wedding or a bar mitzvah and you have the smorgasbord and when they open up the doors and people rush in and then, you know. So it's literally a food frenzy. This is a sex frenzy. Yeah. People are literally gorging themselves sexually because when they're doing that, they're not thinking at very little and therefore they're going to make mistakes and therefore you're going to get the sexual transmitted diseases. Now, I'm going to go to the women. What are the women? Obviously, you can't just have only men on Tinder. It's not going to really work.
Grindr.
Grindr's for homosexual relations. Correct. So what is what are the women? Yeah. Obviously, you need women to make the whole thing move.
Viable.
Correct. So what's the deal?
They're hoping to have the hookup or find the man.
No.
So
looking for
sugar daddy.
A lot of business is that it's a lot of people that women that don't have the time, and there's probably a lot more of them out there. It's just easy. They go gotta do what they gotta do, and then get back to their business.
What okay. We have the same idea. I didn't have any connection for a second.
Same idea.
Right. So it's interesting. Now, insofar as they did this study, they say people who are involved in the hookup culture regularly, what percent have regret after this? What do you think the percentage is?
80%.
I was going to say about
99%. Right, right. So they have different levels of, you know, some people are, there was about 25%, you know, fully satisfied with the experience, or 25 to 30%. Another 25% about feeling ambivalent, and a full 41% said they regretted it.
But you come back the next week anyway.
Okay, I'm not saying, I didn't say, I'm going to say, and therefore they, it didn't say, and therefore because of that they deleted their account. I didn't,
oh, no.
Okay,
no.
Didn't say that.
Do they know the ratio men to women on Tinder?
I'm sure they do, but I don't know that fact. It's a good question.
Next class.
All right, well, that's good. You can go up online. That data is, but obviously it has to be relatively, so there was a, I will, one, there's a very interesting article, you can Google it after class, which is on Vanity Fair, who analyzed the Tinder and hookup culture in Manhattan among professionals. And they noted a couple things. Number one is that, you know, ask the question, so why are the women, if women tend as want to have, they're not interested as much as pure casual sex as men. They're more interested in sexuality, which is a function of a relationship. Just because they're literally biologically hardwired there. That basically maintains the species. So therefore, that's what, as such, they're not, so then question if that's the case, and if they don't really enjoy it as much, there are a certain percentage that do enjoy it equally to men, that's just X. But a higher number are people, women who view it as a function of, who enjoy sex far more in the context of relationship. So what's the idea? So what's going on here? Because quite frankly, since there's a culture focus on this, you as a woman don't want to, you know, there's one thing which is worse, which is be absolutely alone.
Be left out.
And be left out. So therefore, it creates a pressure for the women who don't necessarily want to have these types of relationships, that they don't want to be completely abandoned. So therefore, it's a spiral down. So they have to participate, which causes more people to participate, and then brings down the entire culture down to basically casual sex.
Using insecurities of women.
Yes.
To bring the men.
Isn't that how it's always been?
But this has a powerful a technological force that caused people to opt in. Now, not everybody's like this. Let me just read this. Now, a woman who did this study, this book, American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus, she wrote as follows. The fog of hookup culture, in other words, isn't just the college campuses. It's everywhere. It's infiltrated our lives, obscuring our ability to envision better alternatives, sexualities that are more authentic, kinder, safer, more pleasurable, less warped by prejudice, consumerism, status, and superficiality. We need to understand that everything's happening on campus now because what's happening there is happening everywhere. So, now, her framework is that her issues are that what's the problem with it? That it's not authentic, it's not kind, not safe, not pleasurable, and warped. So the point of the matter is
on Tinder.
Right. So the question really is what are some of the we talked about the unintended consequences being the sexually transmitted diseases, but what really is another social unintended consequence of this, of this hookup culture,
people would rather
less marriage?
Yes.
Than continue an actual relationship.
Okay, and therefore,
why have the baggage when you can just
why buy the cow if you can have the milk for free? Right, the classic phrase. Yes,
from the cow.
Okay, so what is another consequence of that?
About marriages, family, all these things.
What's happening to them?
People are not getting married.
Right. So first of all, so marriage is being the average age is being pushed off later and later and later.
Right.
Now, as you know, I work at Manhattan Jewish Experience, deal with Jewish singles. So people who do not grow up in an observant community, there is not one thought in a guy's head to get married one day before he's 30. Not a second. Zero. And part of the education is that, you know, is to consider the possibility of a monogamous relationship. But that does not come through to a guy, a straight guy with a job in Manhattan, has got zero motivation, zero, to be, to date for marriage. Right, correct. Okay, now.
More than enough.
Now, why? Now, here's the question. I'm going to go to a psychological deeper question. But why is that?
Well, for part of it, they're initially career motivated.
Okay. Well, they're working by day. They're not doing.
And they're getting it for free anyway.
Okay. I mean, but what is the set? What is the? We mentioned all the joys of that. So what kind of? Let me put this. Let me.
It sounds like a good one.
Okay. Let me put in the framework of human development. What stage of life enjoys satisfaction without responsibility? What stage of life is that?
Teenage years.
A baby.
Right, so it's a child through essentially adolescent. Now, basically, what this is, that's why people look back at college as being the best thing, because what is it? You are, on one hand, physically, you're a full adult, and you can enjoy all the
adult,
but you have zero responsibilities. Mom and dad are paying your bills, and then you're away from mom and dad, very important, okay, far away from mom and dad. Very, you know, key.
A thousand
and
more.
You're with people your age of the opposite sex who are also in that situation. So basically, it is an experience of essentially a never-ending adolescence.
Yes, I look, they don't want to grow up. West Side. I got two daughters living up here right now.
Yes.
Thank God they're in relationships. But all they're doing, they're all working all week long.
Right.
Come Shabbos, they're having 15, 20 people over for Friday night dinner.
Right.
Yeah, they go someplace else or go to shul for Kiddush.
Right.
Because that's their lunch and that's how their social scene.
Yeah.
And that's how they hook up.
Right. Well, hopefully not hooking up.
No, but you know what the other
right,
person.
Right, right, right. They're meeting people. Reba, good.
What's
right.
What's their handle?
All right. All right. Okay. So here's the point. So the challenge here is that by what is the social toll? The social toll is that basically you have
everyone wants to stay.
Basically, the impact to society is that if you have a person or if you have a generation who wants to basically be stuck in the adolescent stage of life where I can get the satisfactions of being adult without any of the responsibilities, what does that do to society?
Pushes everything off.
Okay, but so basically the purpose, the creating families, having children, educating them properly, raising them in a thoughtful way, becomes an afterthought. One of the unintended consequences, what I deal with a lot of, is that when I do have couples who are getting married in their mid-30s, they have profound amount of fertility issues.
Right.
In other words, just to give you guys a little sense, in other words, I always encourage people to get married early because people have this fantasy that when I decide to get married, the kids will be there. Really? Yeah. Not true. Let me share some facts from the battleground here. When a woman hits 35, it's already defined as an at-risk pregnancy. Okay? Two, the chance of the, first of all, on average, 10% of couples have fertility issues, just, you know, which is defined by if they're trying to have a child for 12 months, unable to have a child. Now, the cost of in vitro fertilization, entire process, which is generally not covered by insurance, is basically $15,000 to $20,000. Two, many women, since this whole culture is pushing off marriage, the problem is the woman has the biological thing. I know many women who are opting to freeze their eggs. That is $18,000 to $20,000. In other words, because as the woman's eggs age, less are going to be able to be fertilized, and other genetic diseases are going to be problematic. I bring this up as fundamentally to answer a basic question. We're about to check out. Everybody knows that Judaism and, by extension, Christianity as well, has always advocated that sexuality should be a function of within marriage. Now, the answer, one reason, very simply, is because if you do not do that, you're going to essentially, if a guy has an opportunity to be an adolescent, he will always choose being adolescent until basically he's 40. To like he's the only guy at the bar, you know, and you know, and if you ever want to see this in reality, if you ever go on Sunday to Central Park, you'll see a very weird phenomena: fat, old, balding dudes running after 3-year-olds. So what happened? They got married in their 40s, and they're now like 47 years old. Looking 47 years old, running after a 2-3-year-old kid. Now, anybody who's had kids...
It's not their grandkid.
Ain't their grandkid. So the reality is, anybody who's had children, having kids is exhausting. It's not designed to be doing... That is not an activity you want to be doing in your 40s or later, or 50s. It's, you know, kids are... you want to be doing that. You got the juice when you're 20s. You want to be doing that or early 30s. You want to be doing that in your 40s because it's just exhausting. And you want to be... You know, going to your kid's bar mitzvah in the walker. You know what I mean? You know, because I always try to, as part of my motivating guys to get little, you know, to leave adolescence and to become an adult. Basically, you can reduce Judaism down to a bumper sticker. Judaism wants a person to be an adult, to take responsibility, to live a full, robust life, and a more mature. In other words, there is a time for adolescence, but it has a beginning, middle, and end. And what's happening now is that basically the Tinder culture is basically allowing a person to extend his adolescence from age 17 till he's like 35, 37, for 20 years. He wants to squeeze out the adolescence for 20 years. That's exactly what the Torah do not want to have, because fundamentally you kill the entire society. Because basically, then you're not going to have families. They're not going. You're not going to have the. Even when you have the family, you're not going to have the energy to really properly. You're too damn tired. You know what I mean? When you're, you know, I'm 50 years old. I have a 11-year-old daughter. I have six children. She's number six. I don't have the same energy. I don't really want to play Candyland with her as much as I did when I had my first child, when it was a new, you know. And anybody here played Candyland, Stratego, Monopoly, Chutes and Ladders, right, right? Right. So at a certain age, at a certain age, you just run out of it. You just don't want to do it. You're like, I'm done.
That's why you had drinking.
Well, correct. So that's the bottom line. So I'm just sharing with you the main. In other words, when people hear, I'm just trying to address the. We're going to read some of the laws from Leviticus to talk about the sexual laws. When people hear the sexual laws, they say, "Oh, that's so repressive. That's so backward." The reality is, first of all, that's coming now, but literally 50 years ago, that was the norm in America. That's only because of the sexual revolution, 1967 to 1970, that fundamentally changed the thinking about that sexuality should exist outside of marriage equally, not as your choice. But it's a short-sighted idea because, yes, but it doesn't stand, but there's what they call the law of unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. In other words, this is the challenge of all of life. In other words, we make decisions. We think that, you know, result A, that's a good one, but we're not thinking about the unintended consequences of B, C, D, E, and F. The Torah did see that, because basically to allow sexuality outside marriage is defined as being promiscuous, or the Hebrew word is zinut, and basically prohibited. Why? Because if a guy can express his sexuality outside of marriage, he always will. All the time. Every time. Period. That's it. Unless the guy's, you know, not healthy. Okay, I'll leave it like that, right? As well said, right?
Okay, good.
So,
but when you're younger, sometimes you just want to try on the shoe first before, you know, make
right. So the classic argument is so. By the way, so classic.
Make a purchase once in your life.
So excellent point. Right. So people always tell me, said Rabbi, you know, but you got to, you know. So I agree with you, but I want to live with my girlfriend before getting married, get engaged, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know, the try before you buy argument. Let me share you about the try before you buy argument, because I've heard that argument before many times. So here's the deal. Interesting thing, there was a New York Times article that really analyzed the are people who have, in order, because the argument goes as follows, like most marriages in America, or, you know, many fail. I want to see, by living together, I want to see our compatibility. So therefore, to avoid, I'm not doing it for because I just want to have sex for free with no responsibility. God forbid, would that be one idea? No, I want to ensure that I'm going to create a marriage that will last. Okay, so the interesting fact is that they did a study is that there is no greater percentage of
divorce.
Divorce is not affected by that. An interesting thing, actually, who does it greatly disadvantage? The male or the female living together before marriage. The female, let me explain how this works. So the couple likes each other. Now in Manhattan, rent is extremely expensive. So as soon as people feel relatively compatible, you can save yourself $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. Boom. So it has a huge financial motivation as well. So now you're living together. Now what oftentimes happens in relationships, they don't like to talk about some of the bigger issues. And if you're getting sort of like, as you said, the milk for free, or you like to, you know, you enjoy each other fundamentally enough.
Once she moves in, it's not free because you're paying the rent, you're paying the.
Okay.
It's not free anymore. You're married.
Okay. All right. Not true, because you can add. Okay. So, but with things like this, oftentimes that what happens is that many times that people are living together for multiple years and there is no engagement, there is no marriage. Because fundamentally, they sort of create to a stasis, a comfort zone. And there are issues that they intuitively feel that so why aren't they closing the deal? Because they know that there are issues long term, but everybody's fundamentally happy enough. We're in the comfort zone. It's sort of a mutual thing. So don't rock the boat. And then, but ultimately these issues, when you're living together with somebody is extremely difficult. You may those who have done who are it's you know living the definition that everybody's annoying sometimes, That's the general rule of life. That is the law of, that's the law of nature. So, in fact, my five rules of marriage, I'm just going to toss this in, you need five requirements for marriage. You want to be attracted to the woman. You want to enjoy being with her most of the time. Not all the time, because everybody's a little bit annoying. Number three, you have to be able to say that she would be a good mother to your children. Number four is you share the same core values. Critical. And number five, you have good conflict resolution skills. If you have those five ingredients, you have the foundation for a good and successful marriage. So often, but that comfort zone actually pushes off discussing many issues. I had a woman who, you know, I shared this issue with her. She said, I'm not listening. You know, she said, I'm moving in. Okay. So she living with a guy for 8 months, and then there were certain issues, and then it came out. And but the problem is with a woman, she has a clock, a biological clock. So if she wastes her time with a fruitless relationship, now she has to start anew. So therefore, after you, when you have a breakup, you can't just date the next day. You have what they call, like in Judaism, we have a mourning. We have a shiva. We have a shloshim. Now you have to psychologically mourn the death of the relationship, and you have to be able to put yourself back together again.
Otherwise,
so you have
the rebound.
Right. Then it's not really a thing. You have to psychologically re-engage yourself. So that really is a key element there. So the try before you buy actually statistically does not give it any greater insight, and B, opposite, obscures issues that people don't want to, which they intuit might be there, they don't deal with it. And therefore, they're enjoying the comfort zone, and therefore, they're in a certain sense wasting time if the goal is to get marriage. That's, I'm just saying, that's the, you can Google New York Times article about that. Okay, now, so I want to...
He bought the cow.
At this stage
over.
Of the game, I just keep
owns,
going the way it's
he
going.
He owns it
okay.
Straight up.
Okay,
but
all right.
But he's still paying it on it.
Okay, so I just want to... I want to do a little...
Oh,
easy. So this is... I want to just share a couple things here. Got a couple of ideas here. Especially, we just coming off the... literally the tidal wave of the Harvey Weinstein explosion of sexual... harassment and assault issues coming, seeming like every other day some famous person is being accused, maybe rightfully or wrongfully, you know, we have to, there's a benefit of doubt, and being taken down because of alleged sexual abuse. Another, typically a person who is a powerful, let's say a boss, an authority, a famous star, a manager, a producer, an anchor, whoever it is, and using that power to essentially coerce their interns, their underlings, or other coworkers who need their good graces into sexual connections that they do not want, unwanted sexual relations, okay, of different degrees, from full on rape to just inappropriate touch to uncomfortable weird stuff, okay. You can read all, you know, go to People Magazine, you'll feel all the, okay. I don't have to give you all the facts, you know. All right, so let's take a look at the... So the Torah introduces the idea in the 18th chapter of Vayikra. God spoke to Moshe, telling them, and speak to Israelites and say to them, I am God, do not follow the ways of Egypt, where you once lived, not nor of Canaan, where I'll bring you. Do not follow any of these customs. Follow my laws and carefully keep my decrees, for I am the Lord your God, God your Lord. Keep my decrees and laws, since only by keeping them that a person can truly live. I am God. Okay, so the question is, what are the customs? And he goes on, no person should approach a close relative to commit a sexual offense. I am God. Now it goes on to, that's incest. Do not commit a sexual offense against your father, your mother. It goes on. So parents, stepmother, sister, grandchildren, half-sister. Let's go to A17, skipping. Do not commit incest by marrying a woman and her daughter. Do not take your daughter's son's daughter or daughter's daughter, since this constitutes incest. The blood relatives are perversion. Okay. All right. So I just want to get to the issues here. I just want to touch on one thing. What does it mean that? So what were the activities of Egypt? So you see clearly what was happening in Egypt?
The family tree had no branches.
Right. So basically, both societies, Canaan and both Egypt, ancient Egypt, and as well as Canaan, had basically incest. An adultery. Basically, there were no sexual boundaries at all. Zero.
Everything goes.
So therefore, what do you know about the North? If you have to command the Jews, they cannot do that. What are the Jews doing?
They're doing the same thing.
They lived there for 200 years.
Right. Now, most people in the Hebrew thing, they think about like incest. The natural reaction out is, like, oh, that's gross to have sex with your sister or your mother. people's reaction to that's disgusting. Okay?
Same idea how they like to idolize, how they like to worship idols. When we look at an idol, we're like, I don't want to worship it. They had an actual
right. So that's an excellent point. So the truth is, the reason why we view it as being weird or gross, even, is because we have the Torah has been around for 3,000 years and had an impact psychologically on the Western world.
Didn't they pray for sexuality to be taken away from Judaism?
Idolatry. Yeah, idolatry. That's an interesting question. What that is? So that's actually a class of its own right. That's a very interesting thing. That's a good point. He's referring to there's a Talmud a portion in passage in Sanhedrin that deals with that interesting question. But getting back to sex, if I can keep you on sex for a moment, please. You know what I mean?
Single.
Right.
I'm getting
happy. All right.
You didn't buy the cow yet.
Okay. So here's the deal. So the phenomena is that now, but one of the tragic things is that you think that issues of incest are completely what they call taboo. Tragically, the amount of these things happening in our society is not a small number, actually. Mm-hmm. If you go on, there's actually this kind of, certainly if, you know, let's talk about adultery, the lowest number of Americans that are involved in affairs in their marriage is 30%, somewhere between 30 and 70%. It's a very wide range. It gets very hard to know precisely what's going on, but even self-reporting it's 30%, so that's a very large number. So that's clearly happening, A. So that's basically, it's a very Egyptian style mentality, A. And incest, and certainly among with the stepchildren, which of course we're dealing with children, is sexual violence against children is a tragic number. I mean, any amount is not. So in other words, these issues are not. You think this is not an issue? No, this issue is eternal. It's an eternal issue. So that basically what the mission of the Torah is, quite frankly, is to create a society where people's sexuality can have a proper expression. We don't believe in people being celibate, A. But creating healthy relationships and a healthy families. Now, I want to focus on the more relevant point. Vice President Mike Pence got on a lot of people ridiculed him because he had his own personal rule that he does not go into rooms with women by himself, even for meetings. He doesn't go to dinner with a woman unless his wife is there. And he got just pilloried in the text. So it's interesting. Let's take a look. So the Rambam brings down, learning from this section. I don't have the pasuk here. Okay, let's take a look. Halacha number one on chapter 21 here. Whoever shares physical intimacy with one of the arayot, these are people who are forbidden to you, without actually becoming involved sexually relations, embracing, kissing one another out of desire and drive pleasure from physical contact, should be lashed. Okay, this only with if you have a court, if you have witnesses, etc. So basically, making out with somebody, in other words, the terrorists recognize that since sexuality is a process, you have the actual sexual intercourse. Step before that is called foreplay. So if basically you're doing physical sexual contact with somebody who's not you're allowed to, that's prohibited. Why did the Torah prohibit that? Because basically the nature of a guy, if you are in an aroused state with a woman alone and you're making out with her, likely the biological imperative will find its conclusion.
They call it a gender, right?
Yeah, but the Torah itself forbade this. Not something that the rabbis added, okay? So that, in other words, it makes sense because to recognize sex is not an occurrence. Nobody just goes somewhere and just has sex. There are many steps because psychologically, the mind of both parties have to go through various phases of building rapport and creating a sense of closeness. You start with your flirting, which is communicating sexual interest, being alone, the possibility of sexual contact, then physical touch, arousing touch, and then actual sexuality. So the Torah forbade a step right prior to that, number one. Now, let's go to Halacha 1 in chapter 22. It's forbidden to enter into privacy with any woman forbidden. Even if she's elderly or young girl, this leads to forbidden relations. So being alone, so to go into a hotel room or to be in an office at 2 o'clock in the morning with one woman where sexuality can possibly occur. Nobody's going to come in and you know that you're feel very comfortable. That's also prohibited. Now, there's a debate. Is that biblical? Is that a part of the Torah? Maimonides, maybe you want to learn. It's a little bit of what they call a machlokas, not clear. But this is what Mike Pence, on his own, as an evangelical Christian, felt as being a wise move. Now, all these women, I'm not blaming the women or the men, If the laws of Yichud, which is a Jewish law, would have been, if a person has that principle that I'm never going to be alone with a person of the opposite sex, first of all, I don't want, because first of all, nowadays you have a concern of lawsuits and all kinds of he said, she said issues. That's from a legal standpoint, that's a wise move. But again, to get into a relationship that you don't expect, because Freud said it beautifully. He says that every man's a genius when it comes to self-deception. And there's one area about ourselves that we have very little knowledge about, and that's our sexual selves. It's basically living in the unconscious. You don't really understand, and people say I wouldn't want to. There's another thing that people get weird about, even an old woman or a young girl. That's crazy. Yeah, it seems crazy. But you haven't. That assumes that you have a knowledge of your sexuality, what you're really, really into, and under what circumstances. You don't. So the Torah says it basically. It's a nice phrase. The Talmud says, "Ein apotropos l'arayos." You can't be your own guardian for yourself for prohibited sexual relations. So what do? Avoid circumstances where the triggers will happen. It's no different than when Alcoholics Anonymous, when a person who is a recovered alcoholic, he or she knows that he or she has to avoid certain triggers. There are certain situations that if I'm in situation B, likely I'm going to give it back to drinking. So therefore, to hang out with my friends in the bar, even though I'm drinking a Diet Coke, is a bad idea. Why? Because everybody's having a good time, and I feel like a big fat loser. And physiologically, I feel that just one little exception, and it doesn't work. A person has addiction issues; it doesn't work. We have to view ourselves. The Torah says the best healthy stance in order to direct your sexuality positively, productively, healthfully, and put it into a framework where it's going to be really. You can actually have a management of it. Is to avoid certain situations that you have no control. Because talking about the law of unintended consequences, how many times do people, when they have affairs, what do they always say? It just happened. Now, it doesn't just happen. But if you're, because there's going to be a situation that everybody, myself included, if I'm in a certain situation, there is what they call a point of a point of no return. And as far as psychologically, they have a nice, interesting angle. They say that as far as dealing with drug addiction and alcohol addiction, you have two states of a person. There's a cold state, which is like a person in a thoughtful, reflective situation. And then lastly is a hot state, when you're in the zone, when you're in the situation. So you can make all the thoughtful, rational planning when you're in the cold state. But when you're in the hot state, you're gone. It's going to be very, very low probability you're going to pull out. So basically, succinctly pointed out, just to put everything in conclusion, is that basically the Torah's attitude of sexuality, even though it seems, in other words, in between, is it restriction or is it a discipline? In order to have a successful life, it's a disciplined life. And there are certain things that are going to create situations, consequences that are going to be, that seem awesome right now, really awesome right now, but if you think it long term, it's going to be a disaster. And that's really happening to our culture now. And, clarifying that. And that's why the Torah on one hand seems to be backward, archaic, repressive. No! It was the most progressive if you take a global perspective. If you see long term, this is the keys to a successful life. If you see very, very, very short term, she's hot! Yeah, what's it going to, am I getting an STD? Or also there's another thing. I'll just give you a last little fact, something you can look into. They had in the last about 10, 20 years, they had an insight into understanding the brain. You used to believe the brain, after when a person is adolescent or adulthood, it's fixed. What they discovered is that the brain actually has the ability to learn and actually change, what they call neuroplasticity. Your brain can, and what you can do is you can rewire positively and also negatively certain reward things. So if you start doing, so if a person, what happens with when a guy starts to gorge himself sexually,
he wants more,
but the same old, let's say, regular sex is not good enough. It has to be even more weird.
Right.
So he's got to do things which are more, he now has to have sex outside, he's got to do with more women, he's got to be doing things, he's got to be aggressive, he's got to be sadomasochist, because the same level of serotonin to get and dopamine to get the same high from it, the drug. It's not doing it anymore. So therefore, he has to go more and more extreme. So basically, he's teaching his brain to become addicted to the serotonin, which he can only get from the most craziest and therefore most dangerous sexual activity, which will get him fired, which will get him a disease, which will, you know, get arrested, whatever.
Ruin his life.
But he's based, but he's, in a certain sense, he's training his brain.
He needs more,
but of a more extreme thing to get the same level of satisfaction. They discovered this one same thing by porn addiction because what's going on there? Because it's not going to be satisfying what they saw in day one. It's progressive, and therefore it takes more time and more extreme. So basically, you can train your brain to need a serotonin, a dopamine fix, which is only going to be released after the most extreme situation. So that's what, in a certain sense, the Tinder is really teaching the brain that you're only going to be satisfied with the most extreme, crazy, and therefore dangerous situation. So the terrorist methodology is you're avoiding that whole disaster up front. Because if you're having sexuality only in the context of marriage and you're dating for marriage only, then you're really going to avoid all this disaster that the average person can't see. He doesn't have the wisdom to see this. The psychologists, the sociologists are only discovering this really fully now, and they haven't fully grasped it yet. So a person's not going to be a master of all these disciplines. So therefore, the jar gave you a break. You avoid don't be an Egyptian. It's going to be bad. We now know the signs why it's bad, but they're unaware of that. So it's just a little bit of wisdom of the Torah. I want to thank God for inviting me. Always a pleasure, and have a great Shabbos. Be well.